Chapter 11. Clinging and the Fetters. Once Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahakotita were living in Deer Park near Varanasi. In the late afternoon, Mahakotita left his seclusion and went to Sariputta. After exchanging courteous greetings, Mahakotita said, "Now tell me, friend Sariputta, is the eye the fetter of visible objects, or are visible objects the fetter of the eye? Similarly is this so for the ear and sounds, the nose and smells, the tongue and tastes, the body and tangible objects, and the mind and mental objects." "Friend Kotita," Sariputta replied, "the eye is not the fetter of visible objects, nor are visible objects the fetter of the eye. Rather the desire and craving that arise in dependence on both, that is the fetter." Then Sariputta gave the following example. "Suppose, friend, a black ox and a white ox were yoked together by a single harness. If a man were to say, 'The black ox is the fetter of the white ox, and the white ox is the fetter of the black ox,' would he be speaking rightly?" "No, friend," Sariputta continued, "the black ox is not the fetter of the white ox, nor is the white ox the fetter of the black ox. Rather, the single harness by which the two are yoked together, that is the fetter. So too, friend, the eye is not the fetter of visible objects, nor are mental objects the fetter of the mind. Rather, the desire and craving that arises in dependence on both, that is the fetter." "By this line of reasoning, friend," Sariputta concluded, "it may be understood why the Blessed One proclaimed this holy life for the complete destruction of suffering."
"How so?" asked Mahakotita.
"In this manner," Sariputta replied. "There is an eye in the Blessed One. The Blessed One sees forms with the eye, yet there is no desire and craving. Thus it is also for the ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Because the Blessed One is well liberated in mind, there is the complete destruction of suffering." Translator Bhikkhu Bodhi. As we discussed, hindrances are like weeds in a garden. To grow healthy plants, first we must clear away these obvious obstructions. The roots of the hindrances are the fetters. As anyone who has cultivated a garden knows, the root system of a weed is often much larger than the part of the plant above the ground. These roots, underlying tendencies in the mind, arise directly from the contact of our senses with sensory objects and consciousness. As we noted, there are two types of contact, external and internal. An argument with a friend is an example of external contact. As soon as it begins, we think, "I am angry. You have said such and such to me. You have done this or that with something that is mine." Let's call this underlying tendency, I, me, mine. It has confused our mind for many lifetimes. I, me, mine can also arise from internal contact with mental objects, such as the memory of some unkind thing this friend did in the past, or the fantasy of what she might do in the future. Sometimes it feels as if this I, me, mine exists within the five aggregates of body, feeling, perception, thought, and consciousness. Other times, I, me, mine seems to be the container of the five aggregates, or we may think that I, me, and mine, and the aggregates, are identical. This fetter, belief in a permanent self, traps us in the cycle of death and rebirth. It causes us to suffer tremendously. Only when this fetter and nine others are uprooted by the special kind of insight known in the Dharma as wisdom, can we know without doubt or hesitation that the five aggregates are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and selfless. As Sariputta explained to Mahakotita, well liberated in mind by wisdom, we attain the complete destruction of suffering. The five aggregates of clinging. In our ordinary state, the five aggregates are all we know. Eat a meal, take a shower, talk to somebody, listen to something, read a book, and the five aggregates are activated. When we remember the past or imagine the future, we are thinking of the five aggregates. In the present we sit, stand, walk, talk, eat, drink, and sleep only with the five aggregates. So which aggregate arises first? It's hard to say because the aggregates are so interlinked. We drink a glass of orange juice. It has citrus acid, citrus oil, vitamin C, sour and sweet taste, orange colour, and water. Which of these ingredients do we drink first? The answer is obvious. All of them simultaneously. However, when we observe our actions carefully, we notice that the intention to do something actually arises first. Intention belongs to the aggregate of thought. But no aggregate works alone. The moment we reach out a hand to pick up the glass, all five aggregates are activated. Neurons in brain cells, muscles and tendons, feelings, perceptions, mental energy, contact with some object, and consciousness. If we restrain the hand from picking up the glass, the aggregates linked to the intention to drink the juice stop as well. As the word aggregate reminds us, each of the five aggregates is made up of many parts. Form has many millions of physical particles composed of subatomic particles. Feeling is a collection of 108 kinds of feelings. Feelings arise from contact through the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. A feeling can be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. It can arise dependent on past experience of contact, present experience of contact, or imagination of future contact. It can be physical or mental. It can be gross or subtle. In the same way, perception, thought, and consciousness arise from various types of contact and have countless minute subdivisions. So why is this important? Ordinarily, we forget that the aggregates are composed of parts and that these parts are always changing. Moreover, we habitually confuse the aggregates with the fetter we are calling I, me, mine. Since the body is mine, we cling to it. We do the same with feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness. Then they are the aggregates of clinging. When the aggregates change, as they inevitably do, we suffer. Then they are also the aggregates of suffering. The aggregates themselves are neutral. They become aggregates of clinging only when I perceive them with my senses and make them my objects. The difference is our mental state. If we don't cling, the Buddha tells us again and again, we don't suffer. Then they are just the five aggregates, coming into being, existing, and passing away. In a way, we can say that all of the Buddha's teachings are for the purpose of explaining the five aggregates and how to be liberated from them. Fetters. The source of our confusion is the fetters, deep-rooted habits in the unenlightened mind. Fetters are triggered by contact between the six senses and six sense objects. The eye and visible objects, the ear and sounds, the nose and smells, the tongue and tastes, the body and tangible objects, and the mind and mental objects. As we work with the fetters, we need to keep the example of the white ox and black ox in mind. The fetter is not the eye, nor is it the visible forms that the eye perceives. Rather, fetters arise as a result of contact between the two and consciousness. When the senses make contact with external objects, a woman walking down the street, a cup of tea, a yellow flower, or internal objects, a memory, thought, idea, or fantasy, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings arise in the mind, as do thoughts, such as names, ideas, memories and imagination, and many other conceptions. Because of desire and ignorance, which are also fetters, powerful negative habits lying dormant in the mind come to the forefront of consciousness. A sutta explains the process this way. Dependent on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, there is feeling. What one feels, that one perceives. What one perceives, one thinks about. What one thinks about, on that, one mentally proliferates. With what one has mentally proliferated about as the source, perceptions and notions born of mental proliferation beset a man with respect to past, future, and present forms cognizable through the eye. Translators, Bhikkhu Nanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi. This sequence hints at the origin of the whole parade of suffering that makes up a human life. Depending on feeling, craving arises, either to hold on to pleasant feelings or to get away from unpleasant ones. Depending on craving, clinging arises. Depending on clinging, becoming arises. Dependent on becoming, birth arises. And following birth arise growth, decay, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. The good news is that the fetters are not always present. There are many moments in daily life when no fetter has been triggered. When the fetters are absent, we are glad about it. When a fetter arises, we are mindful of it and take steps to overcome it. When it has been overcome, we use mindfulness to protect the mind against fetters that might arise in the future. Here are the 10 fetters. Some of these harmful mental tendencies also arise as hindrances, though there are subtle differences that I will point out as we go along. In general, fetters are embedded more deeply in the mind and are less obvious than hindrances. As a result, it takes more effort and deeper levels of mindfulness and concentration to root them out. Belief in a permanent self. Earlier we called this fetter I, me, mine. It commonly appears as the belief that we have a permanent self or soul that was born into this life from a previous one and that will go on to whatever life comes next. It also shows up as the feeling that the person who said or did something yesterday, or last year, or in first grade, is the same person who is reading this book in the present. Mindfulness weakens this fetter. When we experience how often, even within a few minutes, our breath, body, posture, feelings, thoughts, and perceptions change, we begin to see that there is no such thing as a permanent I, only a collection of aggregates that are always changing. Skeptical doubt. As a hindrance, doubt focuses on our practice of mindfulness. We doubt that we're doing it correctly or that it will lead to good results. As a fetter, doubt always refers to the self. We doubt whether the Buddha is correct that there is no such thing as a permanent self or soul. We doubt the principle of karma. We wonder where the self came from, how it exists in the present, and what will happen to it after death. Healthy doubt is fine because it prompts us to use our intelligence and experience to ponder important questions. But when doubt paralyzes and confuses us, it is harmful and should be abandoned. Clinging to rituals. In the time of the Buddha, some ascetics stood on one foot until they fell down. Others went naked or rolled in the dust. They did these things because they believed that ritual observances would somehow lead to liberation. Clinging to such beliefs is a fetter. If rituals, such as offering incense and flowers to a Buddha image, become our main or only practice, and if everybody does that, eventually the Buddha's mindfulness teachings will disappear and only rituals will remain. Sensory craving. As a hindrance, desire for sensory pleasure can be suppressed temporarily through deep concentration meditation. But when our meditation ends, desire comes back. That happens because attachment to sensory pleasure is also a fetter that remains latent in the mind. As a fetter, sensory craving traps us in the cycle of suffering lives. One definition of the word Dhamma is whatever our minds can remember, imagine, think, create, or produce by way of mental processes. If these phenomena happen to be pleasant, we like them and wish to repeat them now and in the future. We cherish the pleasant feelings that arise from them so strongly that we even crave rebirth so that we can enjoy them again. Hatred. The opposite of sensory pleasure is hatred. If we cannot enjoy some pleasure, or if something goes against our wishes, hatred arises in us. For this reason, wise people realize that love and hate are two sides of the same coin. Like sensory craving, hatred or ill will can arise as a hindrance during concentration meditation. When we pay attention and reflect properly, it fades away temporarily. However, like desire, the root of hate remains in the mind as a fetter that comes back again and again. Craving for fine material existence. Craving for fine material existence arises primarily during deep concentration meditation. Because we experience profound peace, we may wish to dwell in that state even after death. Mistakenly, we believe that being reborn in a realm without feeling, perception, thoughts, and consciousness guarantees us permanent happiness. However, even beings born in fine material existence are not exempt from the suffering of death. Craving for immaterial existence. Similarly, we may mistakenly believe that we can achieve permanent happiness in a realm in which only mind exists. Unfortunately, even subtle immaterial existence comes to an end after many thousands of eons. Conceit. This fetter arises as the subtle feeling, "This I am." We take pride in our achievements. We are proud of our health, youthful appearance, long life, wealth, family, friends, country, prestige, beauty, power, skill, or strength. Sometimes people are even proud of their spiritual attainments. So long as we have proud thoughts, even very subtle ones, we can never attain full enlightenment. Restlessness. As a hindrance, restlessness arises because of unfinished business, or because of things that we have not done or not done properly. We can overcome it temporarily through deep concentration. As a fetter, restlessness arises in a very subtle way when we are close to attaining enlightenment. We are so tired of everything. We wish to leave the cycle of existence behind. We are restless because we wish to reach enlightenment as quickly as possible. Ignorance. Ignorance is not knowing the Buddha's teachings, especially the Four Noble Truths. In essence, not recognizing suffering, its cause, its end, and the path leading to that end. The 10 Perceptions. Cutting through the confusion caused by the fetters takes hard work. In the suttas, the Buddha calls the process uprooting all conceiving. Through mindfulness and meditation, we train ourselves to regard sense perceptions and the feelings and thoughts that arise from them with a certain detachment. Detachment from our ordinary way of perceiving comes in stages. We cannot expect to get there all at once. Impermanence is the key. Working with our own experience, we cultivate the awareness that everything is always changing. The six senses, the six objects of the six senses, contact, consciousness, and the feelings and thoughts that arise as a result. Using mindfulness, we replace our ordinary confused way of looking at the world with 10 very special perceptions. Key points for mindfulness of the 10 perceptions. Perception of impermanence. You become mindful of impermanence by experiencing it. You ask yourself, how long have I been reading this book? What changes do I perceive in that time? Are my eyes tired? Is my body uncomfortable? Have I changed my posture? Am I hungry or thirsty? Is my concentration the same as before? Have the ideas in the book changed my mind? All these and many more are perceptions of impermanence. You do not learn about impermanence from books or teachers or even from the Buddha. You simply pay attention to the changes in your own body and mind. Perception of the absence of self. Perceiving the impermanence of your own aggregates convinces you that nothing within you endures. This perception is not mere imagination. It is your genuine experience. It helps you accept yourself as you are, always changing as a result of causes and conditions. You remember, what I felt this morning is gone now. What I feel now will not be there tomorrow. Nothing in life gives me permanent self-identity. Perceiving this truth gives you emotional stability. Perception of impurities. When you meditate on the parts of the body, some parts are quite repulsive. For instance, bile, phlegm, and pus. You meditate on these impure parts not to make you hate your body or any other body. Rather, you wish to perceive the body realistically. Your aim is clear comprehension and the balanced perception of equanimity. So you meditate on the body until you perceive its parts clearly. Then you apply the same clarity to your perception of feelings, thoughts, perceptions, and consciousness. perception of danger. Like all human beings, you enjoy pleasure, and pleasure leads to dangerous situations. Divorce, quarrels, greed, jealousy, fear, anxiety, worry, nervous breakdowns. Anything can happen because of your attachment to pleasure. Abstaining from pleasure does not free you from danger, but restraining the senses can lessen the danger somewhat. The perception of danger does not mean that you are afraid to get out of bed in the morning. It simply means that you are mindful. When something happens, you are not devastated. You carry on your daily business with awareness. Perception of abandoning. Abandoning is giving up and getting rid of anything unwholesome or unskillful. You think, I refuse to tolerate the thought of sense desire. I cannot endure the feeling of hatred. I abandon anything that harms me or someone else. The perception of abandoning requires effort. It is not enough simply to perceive what is happening. You must be proactive and nip every wrong feeling or thought in the bud before it has the chance to bear fruit. Perception of dispassion. Attachment to impermanent things causes suffering. The opposite of attachment is dispassion. Mindful that everything that arises as a result of causes and conditions is impermanent, unsatisfactory, and selfless, you become dispassionate toward everything. You abandon all conceptions. The perception of dispassion arises in a state of calm bliss. Being dispassionate, you gain insight into reality. Insight liberates you from suffering. Perception of cessation. Cessation means ending. When hindrances such as desire, hatred, and ignorance end as a result of deep concentration meditation, you are free from suffering temporarily. Meditating in this state, you understand, this is calm. This is excellent. I have given up craving for any kind of rebirth. All conceptions have been extinguished. This very thought of calming all conceptions brings peace and bliss, equal to the peace and bliss of Nibbana. You perceive this state of cessation with calmness and tranquility. Perception of non-delight in the whole world. Normally, you do everything possible to be delighted in the world. Non-delight sounds awful and rather crazy. But eventually, through deep meditation, you see the impurity of the aggregates, the danger of sense pleasures, and the peace and tranquility of dispassion. Free from hindrances, you become receptive, elated, confident, and ready. You realize all that is subject to arising is subject to cessation. Crossing over doubt, you do away with perplexity and gain the courageous perception of non-delight in the whole world. Perception of impermanence in all thoughts and conceptions. When you see that all thoughts and conceptions are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and selfless, you no longer wish to entertain them. You see that rebirth in any form, in any place, brings suffering. You are tired of it all. Your mind is focused on total liberation. Perception of breathing in and breathing out. When you breathe mindfully, you see the arising, existing, and passing away of the form of the breath, or breath-body, immediately as it happens. In the same way as you breathe in and breathe out, you perceive that feeling, perception, thought, and consciousness are arising, existing, and passing away. When the mind is fully engaged with this participatory observation, there is no room in the mind for clinging to the aggregates. Through mindfulness of these perceptions, we eventually realize that the I, the woman walking down the street, the I consciousness that arises as a result of contact, the feeling of desire or hatred, and any thoughts, plans, fantasies, and other conceptions that arise in the mind as a result of this perception, come into being due to a combination of causes and conditions. They exist for a moment, and then pass away. When we see things as they really are, craving diminishes, and we find peace. As the sutta tells us, when one abides not inflamed by lust, unfettered, uninfatuated, contemplating danger, then the five aggregates affected by clinging are diminished for oneself in the future. One's craving is abandoned. One's bodily and mental troubles are abandoned. One's bodily and mental torments are abandoned. One's bodily and mental fevers are abandoned. And one experiences bodily and mental pleasure. Translators, Bhikkhu Nanamuli and Bhikkhu Bodhi.